Welcome to another exciting episode of the NIDS View, a weekly show of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies, where we are advancing peace, promoting stability, and helping you to think deterrence. Each week, we will discuss and analyze a recent topic and provide insight to how it affects our national deterrence. The view of the hosts and guests are their own. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome back to another great episode of the NIDS View, a podcast of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. Of course, we have a few others, Deterrence Down Under, Real Space Strategy with Chris Stone, but, you know, this is one of them. It's a good one. They're all good, by the way. And today, of course, I'm Adam Lowther and Curtis McGiffin, who is still Curtis McGiffin, is with us, as is Jim Petrosky, who is still Jim. He's still an engineer. He's been trying to be a political scientist the last few years, but he gave up. It was too difficult. Too difficult.
I just couldn't get a lobotomy in time.
So, you know, we've got a great topic for this week. It came out, I think, General Bussier spoke at an ANWA event on Capitol Hill on the 30th, so that'd be about a week ago. And in that event, he said that using the existing Minuteman III silos might not be the answer. And then so a few days later, the Air Force itself said that they would not be using the Minuteman III silos for Sentinel. And of course, this was some news that was, I guess we shouldn't say that we were surprised, but in some respects, it was unexpected, even though it wasn't surprising because the major delays in the Sentinel program have not been the missile. The missile's on track. It's on budget. You know, it's going pretty well, but it's been, you know, the Nunn-McCurdy breach last year. Yeah. Was all about the infrastructure, the command and control infrastructure, the silos, the launch control centers. And so now, you know, here we are about less than a year from that Nunn-McCurdy breach, and we find out that the silos themselves are not usable for Sentinel. And the Air Force has said that it is going to use the same Air Force land to build new silos. So, you know, that seems to mean that they'll probably keep the launch control centers with some modifications. And if you've ever been out, you know, to a launch control center, you know, there's a few buildings, you've got your security team, you've got your stuff above ground, you got your fenced in area. So it's, you know, it's a little compound. And then of course the missileers are down underground in their capsule. And then, you know, if you go out to the launch facility where the missile is, you know, that's all underground with, you know, there's a lid on top that shoots off and then the missile comes out. And then there's wires that run from, you know, copper wires that run miles, thousands of miles from, you know, the launch control centers and from the base to the launch facilities. And so the Air Force is thinking, well, we'll build the launch facility where the missile is. We'll build new ones close to where the existing ones are so that we can take advantage of, you know, existing communications infrastructure and existing, you know, land ownership and things like that. But we got to dig new holes. And so this has the potential to be an additional cost in a program that's already seen cost escalation go from, you know, roughly $90 million to about billion dollars to about $140 billion. And so this is, again, not necessarily news that those of us that support Sentinel wanted to hear, but it is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing. And I think that would be something worth talking about today is, you know, what all does this mean and what are some alternatives that we could think through? And, you know, for me, I think this is actually a potentially good thing. So with that, you know, you're kind of laughing, Curtis. So I'll turn it over to you since you find my view a little funny. So, Curtis, as you've read about this and you heard it, what was your take?
Well, I think I know where you're going to go with the optimistic glass half full perspective on this and some additional capability and whatnot. And I don't disagree with where I think you're going to go, and you'll go there and we'll enjoy it. I think right now this is a huge facepalm. This is only going to increase. We don't know how much this new revelation is going to cost the Air Force, the American taxpayer, in ready debt. Because we don't know that, it is going to be fodder for all of the Sentinel critics in Congress, yes, out of Congress. All the Air Force has done is fed its enemies with talking points to beat this system up. It is a system that is wholly necessary for the very first national interest of any nation, which is the sovereign protection of its people and territory. And we have just, forgive me, but really face planted this whole process. The Nunn-McCurdy breach that was announced last year, 81% of it was largely attributed to this new revelation of these additional infrastructure costs that somehow the Air Force hadn't figured out when they did the initial estimates 10 years ago, 12, 8 years ago, whenever it was that they did it. And so it's as if we've never done this before. And so it's very surprising to me. And I know there are people out there who are in this business that are going to be very critical of how critical I am. And I'm send me the emails. But I just think we cannot continue to do this to ourselves. And so this has been just bad news that we have to go back to the congressmen like, you know, I'm not going to name names, but the congresspeople that are in the system that just are looking for a reason to kill this program, kill this leg of the triad, and do so out of complete ignorance to the rest of the threat environment that we are living in. And this is just consistent that we are the problem that we are even here. The fact that we are even here into this problem just drives me crazy that our senior leaders, our past presidents, and all of those behind us made this assumption that we did not need to do this anymore, and they were wrong. And the American taxpayers are now having to pick up that bill because of their idealistic goals for the world that the world is not prepared to do. And so now we are left with having to pick up the pieces at great cost and try to move forward to meet that number one national interest. And so I'm eager to have this conversation about how we might benefit out of this. And when we do that, Adam, I want to make sure we talk about alternative measures. I am bothered to top it all off, Adam. Can you sense my frustration? The only response we're getting from Global Strike and other folks out there is, well, we're going to build on the same land. We're going to dig the same holes. Why? There are hundreds of thousands of federal-only acres in this country. Let's do it somewhere else. Let's find another way. There are other options, and let's think about it. Let's get out of the box that we have constrained ourselves into artificially. We're supposed to be an innovative service, an innovative military, yet our only answer is to do the same thing. And so that is also frustrating in that we're just not looking at other opportunities that could come of this the point that you're going to give us. But in the end, we have to realize that this does not negate the need for this capability and the modernization that must come. It is a burden that we must bear. This is just really, really bad news today.
Yeah. Are you a half glass empty or half glass full guy?
Well, on that happy note, first of all, Curtis, I would say that it's a bad betting proposition to second guess what Adam's going to say after you. So we'll see where we are. Maybe we're right. I just never got that. But for our audience to know, you know, completely off topic, but since we're talking about acreage, I have a 15-acre farm. I got lots of land. So, you know, if there is a need to put a hole in the ground, that's good. But having a farm, you know,
you could probably fit one there, right? You could probably fit
least,
one.
Yeah, at least one. But, you know, what's interesting about my farm, completely off topic, is I have a farm truck. It's a 1996 F-150. And about, you know, two, three years ago, the radiator started to leak. And I took some chewing gum and I stuck it in a radiator. And I said, you know, that's probably going to hold out. And then, you know, last winter, the fluid had run out. Actually, it was a good thing because it didn't freeze up because I put water in, but it ran out. So I made that mistake. So the spring, I had to put some more chewing gum in there, but the old one fell out. So I started chewing a different brand of chewing gum because the old way of doing it didn't really work well. And I, so I'm thinking now I got a problem because now the transmission went out. And I can't figure a way to solve it with the chewing gum, but that's the way I've always done it. I just stuck chewing gum in the thing and I can't figure out how to solve that on my transmission. And now I don't have a truck to do the things I need to do. And so I was thinking instead of buying a new truck, I'd probably buy some more chewing gum to solve my transmission problem and figure out a way to do it the way I used to do it instead of come up with a new way to solve my truck problem. And I was just wondering if you guys could help me out with that analogy.
Yeah, you know, the challenge with analogies is that they're always wrong, but sometimes useful.
Sort of like programming. But I'm just saying, you can't, you know, my truck was built in 1996. There are new trucks out there. They're available. There's more options. We don't have to go back to the same old, like we have been doing. That's why we're where we are. And I've said this, you can listen. In fact, I listened when we start prepping for this. I went back, I think it's two episodes ago, and I made the comment that why can't we put holes in the ground faster, better, cheaper, stronger, more capable than we did in 1958 when we were sticking them in the ground so fast. And here I am with my 96 Ford F-250, no transmission, radiator leaking. And my answer is, oh, I'll just put more chewing gum inside the radiator because that's what I did in the past. Meantime, I need a truck. So can you help me, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, you have one sort of main thing. When those holes were put in the ground, one thing did not exist in the world at that time. It didn't come into existence until the presidency of Richard Milhouse Nixon. And that is, of course.
I want to guess.
Okay, you guess.
What is it? Environmental Protection Agency?
You are correct, sir. Well, the greatest slower downer of any kind of military efforts you could imagine.
But who's in charge of all this? Adam, you know, I've heard this argument, and I wanted to say it on a previous episode, but we always argue that China is able to put holes in the ground much faster than we are. But you say China's government is so much worse than ours. So now, which is it? They can put holes in the ground faster, but they don't have to deal with that. So how do we deal with those two things together? Is it really the EPA's the problem, or is it that our leadership and allows the EPA to drive them around?
Are you suggesting, Jim, that we should? Are you suggesting that we should contract the PRC to build our new missile silos?
Well,
I mean, they have the most recent experience.
Yeah, and would we? I don't know. They certainly have experience, but I don't. I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm saying I don't blame the EPA as an organization. I blame the leadership in allowing the EPA to drive us. And I'd even say further, the logistics system is also such a mess. We have created a monster. And it's completely in the charge of the Air Force. I mean, the Air Force could just say, we're not doing that anymore. There's no one requiring the logistics system we have. Is there? Is there really a requirement for all this oversight? Tell me.
Well, all of it? I mean,
there's some congressional requirement. But
all of it?
Let's talk about our alternatives. Okay. Because, you know, this does provide an opportunity.
Bombers on alert.
Well, I mean, we can do that, but... Well, I agree with Curtis that we absolutely have to have ICBMs, and we need hypersonic, maneuverable hypersonic glide vehicles. We need more than just the three legs as they are currently constituted. But ICBMs and you know, Sentinel has capabilities that, you know, we really can't talk about here that Minuteman absolutely does not have. And those capabilities are going to help it get to a target that could prove challenging for Minuteman. And so those kinds of capabilities are ones that we as a nation absolutely do need if we want to be able to hold critical targets at risk in Russia, China, North Korea, and potentially Iran. And the one of the things that, you know, I did a basing study for ICBMs probably 10 years ago. And one of the things I looked at was I went back and looked at all the old silo studies. And, you know, we have not hardened our silos. We haven't built new ones, right? We're still relying on ones that are older than, I mean, as old as you are, Jim, these are still older than you. And that's pretty old. And yeah, so
age, it's like wine, though. You get better with age. So I'm not sure that it's a good comparison. Ask anyone who knows me, I'm much better. I'm telling you, I'm getting better by the day.
So, but they have not been hardened. And so therefore, as Russian, you know, Russia's completely modernized its, you know, its nuclear force, including its ICBMs. So those CEPs, those circular error probables, have shrunk dramatically. And the silos that we were going to put Sentinel in were meant for CEPs of 2 miles,
yes,
not for 100 meters or less. And so as the Russians and the Chinese build these much, much more accurate, and remember, there's almost a direct correlation, as you know better than most, Jim, between the, you know, the yield of a warhead and the CEP. So the lower the yield, the, you know, the tighter the CEP gets, because they still want to destroy targets. And so as these warheads go down, that's telling us, it's a signal to us that their CEP is getting tighter and tighter. And so I don't necessarily think that not being able to build in existing silos is a bad thing, because those silos weren't meant for new ICBMs. They were meant for ICBMs built in the 70s that were going to hit a mile and a half away and shake you a little, but hopefully they wouldn't shake you to where that, you know, that Minuteman was unable to exit the silo. So that's to me, this is a fundamentally good thing because of those simple things.
Yeah, and I just want to correct you. They were built for an adversary of the 1970s.
Yes. Okay? Right.
Yeah, but I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, and people have heard my recent talks. You know, it's our adversaries becoming more accurate. So we have to have higher tolerances on all of our systems. And so I just think that we shouldn't think of the old silos as being unusable. I just think we should add silos to the ones we have. Keep the ones we have, even if there's a 70% chance of them hitting a target, I'm fine with that. We still add the new ones though. So we get double the amount. We need more. We need more than what's already planned, in my opinion, because we need more targets. We need more targets for the adversary to worry about so they don't try them. I mean, that's deterrence, right?
Plus, what about options that we are tried and true that we know work? For example, IE, road mobile, rail mobile, or one of the things that the U.S. Air Force did successfully, you know, almost 60 years ago, and that is they dropped an ICBM out of the back of a C-5, I think it was a C-5 Galaxy, and that sucker, you know, it did exactly what it was supposed to. And so could you imagine if you had C-5 Galaxies with ICBMs in them and those suckers were kept moving around, and just like bombers, if they were, you know, dispersed to, you know, not necessarily just the three bomber bases, but they flew around and were dispersed and maybe they land at commercial airports, could you imagine how difficult it would be? Because this is really one of the key things that we want out of our nuclear forces. We want it to be hard to target. And so right now, when you have old silos, you have bombers that are not on alert, and then, you know, the submarines are the most, you know, most vulnerable when they're entering and leaving port or in port, we actually have a relatively vulnerable nuclear force. And so some of these options could help make, you know, the at least the ICBM force less vulnerable. Curtis?
Actually, I disagree.
Oh my goodness.
I knew it, Curtis.
All right, so let me slap you in the face with some reality here from an aviator. So the Minuteman III enjoys a 98% readiness rate. There is not an aircraft ever developed in our inventory that has probably achieved a 98% insurance. So now your readiness rate is tied to the readiness rate of whatever aircraft you're putting that weapon system
that's
on.
That's true.
And that's a C-5, true. You're lucky to get 65% readiness rate. So that's not a good plan, in my opinion, for a responsive ICBM capability. Now, if you want a first strike offensive capability, okay, it's got some play in that regard. You know, this is an opportunity to really seriously look at a road mobile Sentinel and what this might cost and how it might work. And, you know, back in 1985, someone did the hard work. It wasn't me. I was still in high school. But a GAO report came out that did, it was called the Status of the Intercontinental Ballistic Missile Modernization Program. And on the front cover of this thing says that, a 500 missile mobile missile force, okay, would have a life cycle cost of $44 billion in 1982. That included the personnel, the procurement, the R&D, the MILCON, the operations and maintenance, personnel training, the disposal of the system when it's done being used. That's an entire life cycle cost. If you advance that into today's dollars, that's $155 billion for 500 missiles loaded into hardened road mobile systems. Okay, now, if you just wanted to do 200, that's about $65 billion. That's about 60% the cost of a tube. Of one tube in a new Columbia class submarine, which is $9 billion for 16 tubes. So you are looking at a real bona fide cost savings, just in that old estimate, if you will, carried over into today's dollars of a system that's survivable because it's mobile and you can hide it. And we have 640 million acres of federal land in the United States. We can hide these things in the deserts of Nevada, in the mountains of you name it, and bury them into mountains and these sorts of things. So I think there's real possibility of money savings there. If it's too expensive to dig these holes, or we can't get the EPA waivers to do it, then we might need to look at putting a road mobile system together in on this. Now, I would also like to add, what about going back to coffin launchers? Is that a possibility? How can we build that in a system that would be more secure? Maybe that is cheaper. I would not support putting it on the railway system. Given the number of train wrecks in this country, I'm not sure that I want to roam nuclear ICBMs around parts of this country that has a potential for those sorts of things. And the American people would probably be uncomfortable with that. And so if you're going to relegate these things to sort of these vast areas of federal land, particularly out west, it's best to just keep them hidden on the roads within these giant protected lands of the federal government. So looking at ways of doing this differently might be an answer. And the last thing I would say is, and I'm going to speak a little bit out of turn on this, but one of the things I'm concerned about here is the mission creep that has occurred in the process of the Sentinel system. When it was originally dreamed up 10 years ago plus, it was supposed to be small enough to fit in these silos, right? And then they added a whole bunch of stuff to it, and then they said, it might be too big for the silos. And I don't really know which answer it is. It physically can't fit, or is it a software issue? It can't interface properly. I don't know that answer. But one of the alternatives maybe is, can we downscope the requirements at this point in time? And maybe that might reduce its size or its interface demand in order to make it work in these silos. What trade space can we accept? in order to achieve the modernization and the capability that we need to have. The answer is not to continue to extend a 40-plus-year-old missile, a 50-year-old missile, and into the future in the hopes that it will continue to survive. The last thing you want to do is put the most dangerous, most powerful weapon on a jalopy, right? It should be on something very modern that you can feel safe and secure with. Not that I don't feel safe and secure with the Minuteman III, but as it retrogrades in time and everything ages, there's a lot of work to be done. And I would venture to guess that a lot of the parts, that the companies that made those parts don't exist anymore, and fashioning old parts can be pretty expensive. They've already done the studies that says building the Sentinel is cheaper than extending the life of the Minuteman III, and I will buy that. The last thing I will say here is that even though this is a tremendous cost, and even if we do spend all this money on Sentinel and build new silos, to your point, Adam, let's do it right. The super strong, 700 PSI concrete, all the new technology and those sorts of things, maybe burying them deeper, and these sorts of things to make these silos much more survivable. And if you make them more survivable, you might not have to have as many. Survivability translates into capacity, especially if you're living on a strategy of riding out the first strike from the adversary. So that is something that we've got to make sure. If we're going to go do, if we're going to spend the money, let's do it right. And we can feel a little bit more comfortable in that the cost of all of this that's going to get added on to the debt and be paid for by our kids and our grandkids, at least the system is supposed to last till 2070, which is a whole nother problem. But if it actually does, at least they'll actually be paying for something that they're actually enjoying rather than paying something that we enjoyed and no longer exists.
Yeah, it's well. You know, I would like to sort of put the cost in perspective. So if cost, let's suppose, you know, they go to $150 billion. $150 billion is what the American taxpayers spend each year on illegal aliens for the health care and other things that we give illegal aliens. So that's 1 year of that. $150 billion is also what we spend every 3 months in Medicaid. That's free health care for people without insurance. That's 3 months worth of free health care for some Americans. So let's put this in perspective that, you know, building the ICBM leg of the deterrent, which, you know, if it does what it's supposed to do and what it has done for decades, it will prevent great power war between the United States, Russia, China, North Korea. And so, you know, should... You know, Americans who get free health care give that up for 3 months in order for us to have a system that'll last for 50 years, that'll benefit all of us instead of 3 months of health care that only benefits a few. I would say that's a good trade-off. Or could illegal aliens get less health care and less housing and less other things for 1 year? 1 year to build this system. And I would say that's a very good trade-off. I would say that for the taxpayers who are paying for, you know, the $4.9 trillion that the federal government, not the states, just the federal government, consumes every year, that this is one of the very few things that is consistent with the general welfare clause of the Constitution, which means that the things the government does must benefit everybody, because most of what the government does benefits select groups. This is one of those things that will benefit everybody, regardless of race, gender, sexual preference, you name it. It protects everybody. So it's like one of the greatest DEI programs in the country. I mean, it protects everybody.
I don't disagree with your arguments, but those who will argue against the spending on these weapons in order to prevent war want more spending of what you just described as being bill payers for the system. And so this is the political fight that has to occur and always occurs. And this is where I come back to my first sort of my rant of the opening here, which is that why do we bring this upon ourselves? When there are, when this could have easily, I think this could have been avoided with better planning. I mean, surely. I mean, if it either fit in the hole when you first conceived the Sentinel, when it was GBSD, and you made it worse, or in the process of making it worse, you've now determined after the fact that it never was going to fit in the hole, and that we've got to build all this other stuff, and we missed all of that other cost, and so it's just it's hard to continue to keep faith when these kinds of magnitude of errors occur,
and try to
continue to win that argument,
or we knew all along that this was never going to, it was never going to be the cost projected. It was always going to be more expensive. And we knew all along that we were going to have to engage in a construction effort that, had we said that up front, it may have killed the program. So it could be possible that we
incremental purposefully
That we purposefully underestimated cost, underestimated requirements, because that's what it took to get it far enough along that it was too big to fail. Because once it's, think about 2008 in American banking. You know, the federal government bailed out private banks that lent loans to people who didn't have jobs, and American taxpayers bailed them out. So why in the world would we not keep Sentinel? Because Sentinel sure as hell does a lot more for all of us than the banks that were making loans to people with no jobs. Yeah. I mean, they probably should have failed, but we saved them. Go ahead, Jim.
I know Jim wants to jump in here, and I'm just going to add this. At least it's a jobs program. This is a jobs program. At least construction workers are going to get to work, right?
Yes.
That's true. Let me hit a couple things. You know, I sort of got a little bit off topic because I always get excited about the logistics issue here. So let me sort of summarize, since we're getting near the end here. Number one, I think the biggest issue here is priority. Whether that priority is, Adam puts out, you know, where does the funding go? People poke to the money, but I like to poke because not just about money, it's about the priority of that money. There's money available. We just need to put the priority where it belongs, because America does have a very, very large budget. So that's my number one answer for priority. Number two is alternatives. And there should always be alternatives when we're doing modernization. There should always be alternatives when you're not doing modernization, because no one foot fits every shoe with the adversary. Okay, that was a bad simile. But you get the idea that every adversary is different. Putin's different from, Russia's different than North Korea, than Iraq, and now we got China. Everyone's different, and they're all going to try something new. We've got to be able to be agile. And the way you're agile is you always have alternatives on the table, in the works, ready to pull out of your pocket and say, but what about this? So that's my number two comment. Now, my number three comment, and I got four. And then my third comment that I wanted to make, though, is something that I have not seen at all in any of the plans on Sentinel. I haven't seen it. I don't understand. It's a modern engineering practice that is called modular engineering. You build with what you have today. You take that modular unit out when it becomes upgradable, and you upgrade it to the new modular. And that way, you can get something on the ground that fits the bill, and then you update it as you need to. The problem with Sentinel, though, is, and this is highlighted in this issue, is the holes in the ground are holes in the ground. You can't just pull a hole out of the ground and put another hole in the ground. So that is the issue that should be fundamental to every part of Sentinel. So as Curtis said, you know, if you had a modular rocket to be smaller, that would be fine. But I still stand with Adam in saying you need a deeper hole. You need a modern, stronger hole because of the accuracy of our adversaries. And last but not least, pointing to Curtis, I have a big barn. So a modular launch rocket would fit in my barn. I'd be happy to, you know, begin working the deal on that and put it on my farm. So we don't need to dig a hole. And if it's a, if it could replace my Ford F-250, since the freaking radiator keeps leaking, if I could use it on weekends, that would be great. And imagine what that would do to our adversaries. See me driving around with a nuke on my back for a period of time on the weekends while I'm picking up, project wood down at Lowe's. It would be great. They'd know where to go. So there you go. There's my 4 points.
It's gonna be a pretty big truck. It has to be a big truck.
I have a big barn.
I mean, this is, you know, one of the things, and I'll stop here, is one of the things I wish we would have done at some point is we would have had a zero base study where we assume nothing. And then we say, what do we need to build to have a effective nuclear deterrent, rather than saying, oh, well, we have ICBMs, bombers, and subs. Well, let's replace them. We've done that in the past. What would we actually build if we started from scratch? What would that, maybe it looks like what we have. I mean, there's good reasons to, you know, continue with what we have, but what would we have done differently? I wish, maybe that's a study NIDS needs to do.
The Death Star.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the Chinese, we already had a podcast. The Chinese have the Death Star.
I know.
At any rate, well, it's a great topic. Hopefully, you know, it's one that doesn't kill Sentinel, because I fundamentally believe Sentinel is an absolute must have. And in the end, I think this will be a blessing in disguise, because the holes we had are just not the right holes. And we needed new holes. And so now we're going to be forced to get them or put them on mobiles or whatever else. So, at any rate, well, thanks, gents. It was a great discussion. It was an interesting topic. Hopefully,
Curtis,
you
take
the
a couple sedatives. Take some sedatives, Curtis. You need them. This
nice,
is exciting.
Nice
people need to stop frustrating me.
All right. Well, thanks, Jim. Thanks, Curtis. Another great discussion. Of course, thanks to you, the listeners. And we hope to see you on the next episode. And, of course, catch us on Global Security Review, Deterrence Down Under, Real Space Strategy, QC Events. There's so much going on at NIDS. Make sure you engage with us. Send us an email. We will respond. We may pick your topic. If you give us a topic that you think we should do for our episode, we may take that topic and run with it. We've done that in the past. We've had listeners who's had a topic idea. We've had them on. Jonathan Cephalou came on for one of our episodes and we talked AI. So we do that as well. So make sure you stay engaged. And of course, we always want to remind you to think deterrence.
Thank you for listening to the NIDS View. This show is produced under the NIDS Podcasting Network, a division of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. NIDS is a 501(c)(3) organization dependent upon donations to provide this podcast and bring about awareness of the peacekeeping value of U.S. strength and our national deterrence. You can catch all of our podcasts or provide feedback at thinkdeterrence.com. I would like to thank our producer, Kimberly Charrington, our sponsors, and all the fantastic members of the National Institute for Deterrence Studies for making this podcast possible. Stay tuned next week for another exciting and informative The NIDS View.
The NIDS Podcasting Network.